On today's program, Shane Etzweiler, President and CEO of the Great Falls Area Chamber of Commerce, with the impact of COVID-19 on local businesses, and Lisa Schmidt, local rancher and author of Land of Grass. Welcome to Voices and Views. Good afternoon and welcome to Public Radio coming out of Great Falls, Montana, 89.9 FM, KGPR Great Falls. And on the phone today, I have Shane. And Shane, I should have asked you this before. How do you pronounce your last name? I'm going to go with Etzweiler.
You hit it, Tom. You did a great job. Etzweiler, yep.
Shane Etzweiler, he is the president and CEO of the Great Falls Area Chamber of Commerce. And thank you so much for doing the interview with us today.
Thank you, Tom. Just appreciate the opportunity to visit with you and visit with your audience as well, too, as far as what's going on in Great Falls with the COVID situation.
Well, I'd like to address the COVID situation, but first, how about a little bit of an overview of your organization, please?
Yeah, absolutely. And again, I'm president and CEO of the Great Falls Area Chamber of Commerce. And the Great Falls Chamber of Commerce has been around since 1888. I mean, when you think about that, 1888, that's basically when the city was founded and the police department. And so we've been around for over 130 years, and we're proud of that. And we're proud of what the chamber's done over the years for the city of Great Falls and for the area.
And why did they deem this necessary? In 1888, that's an incredible history.
Yeah, you know, it started as the Board of Trade, and really they focused on what they could do to grow Great Falls. And so they focused on, agriculture in the area. They focused on industry, and then they also focused on growing the population.
And I understand part of your mission is creating opportunities to connect you, the individual, with others and increase your visibility. And how are some of the ways you do that in your organization?
Yeah, you know, Tom, we've got as a chamber, that's one of our purposes, is to promote, to support, to advocate for business, and then also to network. And so what we help businesses do is we help them gain more visibility in the community. We do that through a number of ways. We've got a number of committees that businesses can get involved in. When you get involved with the committee, you start branching out your network. You start meeting other individuals and other folks in other positions throughout the city. We have an ambassador committee, which is a great way for new businesses to join the chamber and to start getting exposure. They call on other businesses. They're at our quarterly events. They go to our business after hours. You kind of get your face and your name out there, and really it's recognition. We also have several what's called BNGs, which are business networking groups, and we limit it to one industry per group. So if you're a real estate person, we only allow one real estate person in that group. But again, helps you network to gain leads, to gain referrals, and to learn about the others as well too, and to also give referrals. And how can we create greater connections within our community with each other? And really, Great Falls is a great community, and it is built on relationships. And we've seen that, and a lot of people say that. But we continue to hear from members that, you know, once they decided to join the chamber, get engaged, and get involved, they start seeing their business grow. And it just becomes naturally because we create those networking opportunities for people to get connected and get connected with other business leaders in the community.
I understand the Great Falls Chamber of Commerce is membership funded. Do you receive any other funds?
You know, we're primarily membership funded. So as businesses that join the chamber, we have a tiered membership structure, and it's based on benefits. You know, years ago, chambers used to be based on the number of full-time employee equivalents that you had, or FTEs is what they were called. And so then that determined how much you paid to the chamber. And instead, a number of years ago, 6-7 years ago, they determined to go to a benefits-based. And when I started the chamber 3 years ago, we really took another look at it. We reworked it, and so our starting membership is at $350 a year, and then we go up, you know, above that. But each time you go up to a new level, there's additional added benefits to it, where you get tickets to our business for breakfast, or our quarterly luncheon, or our annual dinner. There's also some media and marketing packages that are included as well. So we try to determine, you know, what is the business, how long have you been in business, And what do you want? What do you want from the chamber, and how can we help you accomplish your goals? And really, that's our purpose. What are your goals, and what kind of membership level would help you accomplish those goals? And when you think about it, I mean, even at the $1,000 level, what do you pay for advertising, you know, on a billboard or a bench or, you know, on radio or TV? And those are great avenues, too, as well. But when you invest at that level or any other level at the chamber, you get a lot of benefits that come with it. And really, it's exposure to the greater Great Falls community.
Now, if I have a business and I'm kind of sitting on the fence or want more information or maybe even struggling a little bit, how do I contact you and how can you help me?
You know, the good question. The best way to contact us, if you really want to research the chamber, and we've redid our website about a year and a half ago, you can go to greatfallschamber.org. Again, greatfallschamber.org. And there you'll land on the landing page of our website, and you'll be able to see our committees, our business networking groups, our mission, our purpose, and then also our membership levels and how to join. Obviously, with us also working at home and working remotely, you can call the chamber. You can leave a message for one of us as well, too. And that number is 761-4434. And we do get back to you. And then also you can request information through our website. You can, you know, request and say, I'd like to learn more about this committee or I'd like to learn more about membership. And really, that is probably the best way to get in touch with us right now is to go through the website, send an email that you're requesting more information, and we will definitely get back to you and help you out.
Now, you and I and everyone else are kind of living in a different circumstances, different days, uncharted waters, you might want to say, as far as this COVID-19 virus, the coronavirus. How's that affected businesses in Great Falls, and what are you doing to help these businesses?
You know, I think a couple of things, Tom, is it's had a tremendous impact on business in Great Falls. Obviously, with the emergency directive and the stay-at-home orders and then shutting down, you know, businesses as far as restaurants and no more dining and bars and casinos, it's definitely had an impact on our community as far as that goes. You know, and it's affecting other industries as well, too. You know, if you're non-essential, obviously it's affected you and impacted you, you know, in huge ways. But I also want to bring up, you know, our medical facilities where we've got medical clinics, whether it's dentists or Benefis or the Great Falls Clinic, they're being impacted as well, too, in that they have really shut down any non-elective surgeries or elective surgeries. If it's not an emergency, they're not doing that. So it's obviously had an impact on them as well, too. And what we've been doing as a chamber, we definitely have been proactive. I think it was 4 weeks ago that we actually put out this restaurant takeout blitz guide. And so I know a number of news stations picked it up. KRTV did. KFBB did as well. The Great Falls Tribune. And then it kind of grew legs of its own, I like to say. And so someone started a Facebook page that was Great Falls Takedown, Takeout. And it was Takedown COVID, but Takeout and Support Our Restaurants. And man, I'll tell you what, it's just been very impressive to see the support for restaurants as well, too. But it is a huge impact on businesses. We also put together a retail grocery guide as well that's on our webpage. And then we have a lot of resources for businesses as well, too. So we have a lot of links on there on resources, and we continually update those. So as we get a new update, we'll post it. We'll also market that it's new and what date it was updated, so that way our members can kind of see the most current information available.
I have to applaud our first responders, our medical team in Great Falls, our doctors. And another group I'd like to throw in there is our retailers, our convenience store operators. They're kind of on the first line as far as maybe being affected of catching this coronavirus with all the business traffic they have coming into the stores. Maybe now that we're under a lockdown, how do you proceed to get out of the lockdown? Do you just open up businesses the way they were? Are you guys planning for a reopening or anything like this?
Yeah, absolutely, Tom. You know, and those are some conversations that we've started as well with the mayor, you know, just a couple of days ago involving the Great Falls Development Authority as well. They've also, I sent to the mayor some guidelines that the U.S. Chamber has put out and that they've recommended as well to the administration, the national administration, and on how we reopen America and what does that look like and how is that done. And obviously, it's going to have to be taking a look at its stages. You know, what is semi-essential, I guess, if you would, and how can we start reopening business? The sooner we do it, the better, obviously, but we need to make sure that we're being diligent and thoughtful about it, and that we're making sure that we're making the right decisions on what type of industry or business needs to open when and at what point.
You touched on national chamber. Sounds like there's a regional chamber. Do you want to kind of comment on that, please?
Yeah, absolutely, Tom. So as part of the Great Falls area chamber, we belong to what's called MACE, and that's the Montana Association of Chamber Executives. So I work with the other chambers, the other presidents, CEOs, some of their governmental affairs people as well. And so we are constantly sharing ideas. What are you doing? We're doing this. And so we kind of steal from each other as well, too. That way we can continually put out a great product for our local businesses in Great Falls. We belong to the Western Association of Chamber Executives, so that encompasses about 15 states here on the western side of the United States. And so there's a lot of surveys they put out, so I gather a lot of information from them what other chambers are doing as well, too. And then we also belong to the Association of Chamber of Commerce Executives, and that's the national level. And I belong to a group called the Emerging Cities. And so a lot of questions, you know, hey, we're doing this, or I have a question about this. How are you doing it? I posed a question kind of on their board as well, you know, what are you seeing as far as credit unions? Are your credit unions also offering these emergency SBA loans? And so some are, some aren't. And so we recently put out just last week a guide to the banks and financial institutions, including credit unions, that are helping businesses with these emergency small business loans. And so the chamber, we continue to put out emails every week. We do normally. We have in the past on Tuesdays and Fridays. But during this crisis, we've been putting them out as we gather information that we think would be helpful for business. Then we also belong to the U.S. Chamber. And so I've got a good connection with the Western Executive Director of the U.S. Chamber, and he's based in Seattle. And so he's also giving us information. So, again, we kind of use that information to help do and provide the best information for the Great Falls businesses, and also individuals. So, I mean, anybody can go to our website and take a look and see what some of those resources are.
You mentioned small business loans. Has this been approved? This has been approved by our government. Can they go to you to find out how to apply for those? And then the second part of that question, are you receiving any funds through this Coronavirus Act?
No, we're not. The chambers have been instrumental in trying to help small businesses, and I would consider us essential. And some states have considered the chambers as essential business because of our role and what we do to help businesses. However, what we do is basically we refer people to the banks. Or again, like I said, sometimes we'll go and we'll search out answers, and that's why we put out the guide for what banks and financial institutions are giving out the SBA loans. But what we recommend is that, number one, you go to your current lender and you visit with the person that you already have a relationship with. And we find that those that have and do, they've already have their loans, they're already closed, and they've already got the funds. So your first step, obviously, would be to try to go to your local bank where you do your business at, and work with your local person right there, and see what steps you need to take to get those loan applications in. And again, continue that communication throughout the whole process. Because a lot of times they're going to say, well, we need these forms, or we need your payroll from last year so we can make the proper projections on what you're going to need to help cover you, you know, for the next 2 months. So, but yes, we are a resource, and we have had a lot of businesses call us just to kind of get some guidance and direction on where they need to go.
Now, you are involved with getting together with businesses. You have breakfast, banquets, different type of events of gathering people together and fostering new ideas or going over business strategies. Now, that we can't do that anymore. We can't get together anymore like that. How are you guys going about that? Are you having web seminars, that type of thing?
Yeah, we are. In fact, we just started a brand new email, Thomas, so I'm glad you asked that. It's called our Wednesday webinars email. We don't want to flood everybody with all this information. Well, this email is about this, and we don't want to send you two or three emails a day. So we've really tried to target and specifically send out emails. So we started a Wednesday webinar. So if you get that, you can take a look at some upcoming webinars that are either offered by the U.S. Chamber, State Chamber. Sometimes Senator Tester, Senator Daines has something going on, a town hall, a virtual seminar or webinar as well, too. And we just want to get that information out to our chamber members on what's going on and different webinars they can listen into to gain more information. Anderson Zermulin did one recently, so we put that information out as well. So even sometimes our local businesses are doing webinars, and we want to make sure that our businesses are take advantage of that if they're available. And what we've done for the chamber, we also purchased Zoom, and so we can have virtual meetings. So last week we had a virtual business for breakfast. It was kind of our very first one. It was kind of a kickoff. And then we also had one again yesterday, and we had a special guest, which was kind of neat. And Senator Daines actually joined us yesterday morning and just wanted to hear from the businesses, you know, what are their concerns? How has this been impacting them? And it's just a great conversation. We're honored to have the senator join us for about 40 minutes and take questions from our group. So we also next Thursday, and that's going to be on April 23rd, we're going to have what we're calling a social connect gathering. And that'll be on Thursday, the 23rd. That'll be at 4 o'clock. And it kind of takes place of our business after hours, and we're just going to have this event where people can kind of get together virtually and just kind of visit and talk, and we're just going to be doing some fun, interesting things with them as well, too. So really, we're reacting as well, too, and still trying to provide a lot of these networking opportunities for our chamber members, and they enjoy it. We've had great comments, and people, I think, just like to see other people out there and see that everyone's doing well.
One of your big events is the annual dinner. Has that been postponed? Or
we have not. In fact, we, as we're looking down the road, what we've done, Tom, is we've kind of asked a lot of our committees, and we didn't have any events, chamber events, in the next few months, but we have had some of our committee events, like we have Leadership Great Falls, Leadership High School. Our Military Affairs Committee has the annual Military Affairs Golf for Roo. And so we've asked all of our committees to not cancel them, but to take a look at rescheduling some dates for these things down the road and in the future. And so our annual banquet, that was a date that we actually have set about a year and a half ago. And so we wanted to start putting that date out there, which we did just recently, that save the date. We're planning on our annual banquet. It'll be on September 24th. Be on a Thursday evening. And so what we've done is we've just kind of let people know, because as people are starting to postpone and reschedule their events this fall, there's going to probably be a lot of events colliding. And this is a big event for the chamber. We have a lot of people that come to it. So we just wanted to start putting it out there now that we're looking at the event. Now, what is that going to look like 2 months from now? I don't know, and it's hard to say. It's going to kind of depend on how well we battle this coronavirus situation. And if we can flatten the curve, great, we'll have it. But again, we're kind of continuing to monitor the situation.
Looking at your website, it's very easy to operate, but there's so much information on there. I want to kind of touch on some of these other subjects I've seen on there, like the low-cost airfare initiation. What is all that about?
Yeah, absolutely. So in 2011, the board, in working with the airport director, John Faulkner, came up with the Low Fare Airline Initiative. And really what it was for was to raise funds, raise pledges from the business community. And the goal was to attract airlines to come to Great Falls and also to bring in new routes to Great Falls. And the goal, the purpose of that was to lower average airfares in Great Falls. And that was accomplished. So the very first airline to come in was Frontier Airlines in 2012, and they were here for a couple of years. And then due to their own restructuring and management changes at Frontier, they left the market. But that started it. And so from 2013 through 2017, we were the low-cost leader in Montana. And so what this is we have to start another campaign to raise additional funds for this next go-around, because we had the funds, they carried us for a number of years. We were able to apply for what's called a SCASI grant, and that stands for SCASI, a Small Community Air Service Development Grant. And so we were able to leverage some of our funds by using that grant, and there was a match-type program. And so we were able to bring in the direct to Chicago direct flights over the past few summers. And so as these flights continue to bring in, we bring in these routes, it does lower our average airfare. Now, I gave you the dates when we were the lowest in the state for a while, and that was from 2013 through 17, so it was a five-year period. In 2018, Missoula beat us, and it was because Missoula was able to bring in American Airlines. And, of course, we didn't bring in another additional airline, or we didn't add any additional routes. So they beat us by just a few dollars. But so it does work. And so if there are businesses that are would like to contribute, would like to pledge, we don't need the money right now, but even just a pledge, you can go to our website, and at the top you'll see Low Fare Airline Initiative or Low Fare Initiative. You can click on that, and you can do a pledge. And really the challenge is, I mean, airlines, no different than anyone else, are looking at, you know, their revenue, their gross margins, and they're trying to determine what routes are best for them. And also with the planes, there's a 50-seat plane, and they're continuing to retire those. I mean, the inventory continues to go down. It has gone down over the past 10 years, and eventually those planes are going to be retired. And that is really the main plane that's used in Great Falls. So we need to ramp up people flying in and out of Great Falls, and that's really the purpose of the Low Fare Initiative.
I've also noticed you have a COVID-19 resource information button on your website.
Yeah, what that is just really a list of resources, Tom, for businesses. There was a communication template. You know, when COVID first came out and people weren't sure what to do, and they're all of a sudden canceling events and postponing events, how do you communicate to your employees? How do you communicate to the larger community? And so those were just communication templates, and that's kind of how that started. And then, you know, what's guidelines for employers? What's guidelines for employees? What are some funding vehicles? So we have information from the SBA, the U.S. Chamber, and anytime we update that, we just update it and put new, and then we put the date that that's new. And so a lot of resources on there that businesses can go to. Once you click on that COVID-19 resources button, you'll see a lot of links to a lot of additional resources.
And congratulations, you've won some awards. And I want to point out the number 11 ranking across the nation as best small cities to start a business. And so congratulations on that. What does that mean to you?
Yeah, thanks. You know, I think like Montana, what that really is we are a great place to start a business, or we're a great place to have a small business. And again, we're kind of ranked against a certain size or population of cities or a metropolitan area. And so what that means is we're kind of the best in the country. We're a great place to come in to develop a business, to start a business, and then sustain a business. Entrepreneurship is alive and well in Montana, and I think that goes back to just our independent spirit and our let's get it done. And some people say, you know, we're just going to pull ourselves up by our bootstraps and we're going to make it happen. And I think that leads to why we do rank so high across the country as far as starting a business, sustaining the business, and then just, again, continuing to grow our economy. We know that really the driver in the American economy is small business. And while you always hear about the larger businesses and larger companies, small business that drives America, and it definitely drives our economy in Montana and specifically in Great Falls. So we're proud of that designation, and that's why we have it on our website.
Shane, I have to ask you, how are you doing personally?
Doing great. You know, I think our heart bleeds for what's going on as the chamber and kind of the representative of businesses, and really it does. I mean, I've had great conversations with my staff, but we're concerned as well, too, and really it's heart-wrenching to see what's happening for businesses and to hear about the loss of revenue and the loss of income and employees getting laid off. And I come from a business background. I come from retail, Tom, and so I know the impact that this is making on these businesses and company, and that's why we've just worked diligently. We've worked hard. My staff has put in a lot of hours, a lot of time, a lot of research to make sure that the information we're giving to our chamber members, you know, it's good information that will help them. It's why we developed the restaurant guide, the retail and grocery guide. It's why we developed the bank guide to help, again, give these resources, because that's what the chamber does. We are just here to help our business community in Great Falls. This is a hiccup. It's a speed bump right now, but we want to be proactive and what we can do to help them right now through the situation. But then we're starting to think about what's it going to look like on the other side. How can we get reopened and how can we get this economy in Great Falls jump-started again?
And how about some contact information if one might want to know more information?
Absolutely. And again, you can go to our website, and it's greatfallschamber.org. A lot of information on there. If you need more information, you can also email us. We do have our staff. If you click on staff, you'll see all of us there. You can email any one of us for more information as well, too. And, of course, you can call the chamber. It's 761-4434. You can give us a call. Obviously, we're not there right now, but you can leave a voicemail, and we'll get to you just as soon as we can.
Shane Etzweiler, President and CEO of the Great Falls Area Chamber of Commerce. Thank you for being here on Public Radio.
Absolutely, Tom. Well, thank you. You know, we're going to get through this. And I think one of the things I'd put out a message at one point that, you know, fear a lot of times tends to freeze people up and they hesitate to make a decision. And, you know, we don't want to be that way. We want to use it as a catalyst to be proactive, to know that we're going to, you know, get beyond this. We're going to survive it. We're going to come out smarter and better for it. And we're going to come out stronger as a community. And I firmly believe in that. And we're going to get through this. We're going to make it through it. And just appreciate KGPR and you, Tom, and for what you're doing for the community as well. I just think you guys are just a valuable resource as well. So thank you for your time as well this afternoon and taking the time to visit with me.
Welcome back to 89.9 FM, KGPR, Great Falls. My name is Tom Halverson, and on the phone today, I have Lisa Schmidt. Yes, that's right, Lisa Schmidt, and she is the proud producer of Land of Grass, but she does so much more. And I'd like to say I'm talking to Lisa from her home, where she's curled up in a nice chair in front of a fireplace. But that's not the case, is it, Lisa?
No, I'm out on the pasture. I'm sitting in my pickup. The snow's blowing sideways, and I'm looking for new calves because it's calving season right now.
Lisa, thank you so much for doing the interview.
And I'm glad to. Thanks for the opportunity.
You know, why don't we start back in the beginning? Young Lisa Schmidt, probably thinking of what you want to do as you're growing up. How did you grow up? Where did you grow up?
I grew up in Oregon in the Willamette Valley. And I lived in town until I was 10. My dad had tree farms, and he wanted to buy another tree farm, so we needed to sell the house so that he could buy a tree farm. So we moved out to the country, and to appease me a little bit, he bought two bottle calves for me. And I raised those calves, and about the time they were grown up, I told him I wanted to have a ranch.
Now, were you part of 4-H growing up?
Well, I tried, but I wasn't very good at halter breaking my calves. So, no, I didn't. I didn't learn anything. I didn't participate in 4-H. It would have been a great experience, but I wasn't very good at that. I learned the hard way. After college, I moved down to Nevada and got a job on a ranch. I didn't know how to ride a horse. I didn't know what a swather was. I didn't know anything, but I learned, mostly because of the generosity of the ranch owner. He was awfully patient with me.
Now, growing up, did you decide that you wanted a ranch, or did you decide you wanted to be a writer? How did that all come about?
You know, when I was 10, I knew I wanted to be a rancher, and everybody told me that you couldn't go buy a ranch. That was impossible. The only way to get a ranch was to marry a rancher. Well, I didn't want to marry a rancher. I wanted a ranch. So so I quit telling people that and just went about my business. When I was a senior in high school, I was carrying groceries out. I was a grocery bagger, and I was carrying groceries out for the high school journalism teacher. And she said, why don't you sign up for the newspaper class? So I did, and I found out that I really love to write, too.
And what were some of your earlier writings? Did you publish anything before you became a rancher?
I was working on this ranch down in Utah, and we were doing some fun stuff with sheep and cattle. We were letting the cattle come in and graze down some old decadent grass because sheep need a higher nutritional level. And so the green grass would come up, and then the sheep could graze it after that. And so I wrote a story and took some pictures for Range Magazine. And that was the first article I ever had published. And when I went back to college for my master's at Utah State, I wrote a thesis, and they told me I had to pay to get my thesis published. And I said, wait, people pay me. I don't pay them to publish. They laughed at me about that. But
that's funny.
I got my thesis published.
How about siblings? Did you come from a big family?
No, I have three brothers, and my oldest brother decided just last year to move to Conrad from Oregon. The rest of my family lives in the Willamette Valley still.
And how do you feel about your brother living in Conrad?
I love it. When we had a big storm, when was that, 2 or 3 weeks ago, he came out and stayed at the ranch for the weekend, and as soon as we could get out the door, he started plowing snow, and I started feeding the cows, and we saved a few calves, so it's really nice. It's strange for me to have somebody who knows my whole personal history here in Conrad, but it's really, really nice to have somebody around that I can count on.
Why don't you talk about moving to Montana and your love for Montana?
Yeah, so I was down in Utah and finished my master's. I got a job in Whitehall as a county extension agent. And so I spent about 4 years as a county agent, and then the opportunity came along to be a magazine editor for the Montana Farmer Stockman. And so I did that for a few years, and then I started freelancing, writing magazine articles. And then I was at a conference in Great Falls for a story, and a mutual friend introduced me to the man who would become my husband, Steve, and we started dating. And I told Steve, I said, you know what? I love you dearly. I want to spend the rest of my life with you, but don't ask me to move and don't ask me to hurt my son. And then one day we were driving down the road between Conrad and DePuyer, and he said, I think this ranch might come up for sale. And I said, let's try to buy it. So he found out who was in charge of who was the owner, the estate trustee, and I wrote him a letter, and we ended up shaking hands and making a deal on the Graham Ranch. And that was in we signed the papers in 2006.
Was it love at first sight? With your husband, not the ranch.
I was going to say, was it love at first sight with Steve or with the ranch? Both, but at different sites. you know, Steve was an interesting, it really was. We dated for about a month before he first proposed. We were putting gas in our respective pickups at a gas station in Great Falls, and he said, hey, will you marry me? And I said, yes. And then the whole rest of the time driving, we were driving separately, and I kept trying to convince myself that I was crazy, and I kept coming back saying, yeah, I'm going to marry this guy. So I did. And we were married for 13 years. He died in 2017.
Sorry to hear that. How did he pass away, if you don't mind me asking?
He had a heart attack. He had heart issues, and he had a heart attack. He was actually trying to get a cow in. She'd gotten out on the county road, and so he died doing exactly what he wanted to do.
Terrible.
And if I had to choose a way to die, that's the way I'd want to go too. It was rough for everybody that he left behind, but that was the way he needed to go.
Now, you have children, is that correct?
I do. I have a son who's 22. He's in the Air Force, and he's in Oklahoma, just about to start pilot school. And my daughter, Abby, is 13, and she's right now, she's doing school from home because all the schools are shut down, and so I have a lot of extra help during calving and lambing season. So
I guess you might consider that a benefit of COVID-19 virus being out there.
It's wonderful. I am so happy to have her. She helps me feed. If I need an extra driver or I need to get a cow in, she's right there. We did agree that she needs about 4 hours a day to actually get her schoolwork done, mm-hmm. but it is really nice to have her around.
Now, is she homeschooled, or are the teachers including her on, like, webinars?
They do webinars and lots of distance learning type things. She checks in with her teachers via email all the time. Conrad was already had things set up for distance learning and for personalized learning, and so they were a step ahead when the schools all shut down.
And how big of a spread do you have out there? How many livestock? What are you involved with?
So that's a question. In agriculture, that's a question that you're not supposed to ask because it's kind of like saying, how much money do you have in your bank account?
Okay, I'm sorry.
but I do. This ranch will support a single family, but it won't support two families.
Mm-hmm. And what do you have on the ranch? Pigs, cows, that type of
no
thing?
Pigs.
No pigs.
We don't do pigs. We do have we have sheep, and we started out with sheep mostly to honor the heritage of the ranch. The Grahams raised sheep here. They were originally from Scotland, and this was a sheep ranch for years and years. Steve and I both knew more about cattle and had always assumed that we would have cattle. So we have Black Angus cattle and Targhee sheep.
Let's talk about the early days on the ranch. When you bought the ranch, how about that first day driving up? How were you feeling? And just the early years maybe of, were you struggling a little bit, that type of thing, or everything went as planned? I'm sure it did, right?
Did everything go as planned?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, we both love this place, and it's magical in its own way. It's rolling prairie. The sunshine is beautiful. The nature is amazing here. So we fell in love with the land immediately. Our mortgage, we had an annual mortgage. It was always due the 1st of January. And we always managed to pay the mortgage. But for the first probably 5 years, I didn't sleep at all until about March because I was worried about money. I knew we had the mortgage paid, but how are we going to pay all the other bills? And then after about 5 years, in about February, I'd start sleeping again because we'd figure that out. And then after about 8 or 9 years, I didn't lose any sleep over it. So, yeah, the first few years were really, really tough. Every once in a while, we'd look at each other and we'd say, do you suppose one of us ought to get a job off the ranch? And then we'd think about it for about 30 seconds and say, no, we'll just do something different. Well, I mean, we just won't spend any money for a little while because we both really wanted to be here.
When I'm thinking about you being on that ranch, I'm thinking that's a lot of work for you and maybe your daughter, Abby, and your brother. You're pretty much up. You work 7 days a week, or you five and you get Saturday and Sunday off. Is that right?
I get up about 4:30 or 5 in the morning and think about what needs to be done. I wait for the sun to come up. I get out the door, and I have a plan in my head, whether I actually accomplish that list or not. It depends on what I find as soon as the sun comes up and I walk out the door. I don't plan on days off. Every once in a while, though, I'll go to the mountains or go do something fun. Lots of times we combine fun with meat deliveries or meat sales or something like that. And we have a lot of fun here, too. We ride our horses and check things out and enjoy. We have a couple picnic spots, and we go have a picnic. So it's not all slave labor, but I don't take very many days off.
I love listening to your podcast because it's life on the ranch. Sometimes it kind of tells you about the trials and tribulations that you may have, but there always seems to be hope, I guess, at the end. And most of them are very lighthearted and they're very well written. Do you have trouble coming up with these every week? From what I understand, we're not the only ones you provide this service for. Is that correct?
It also goes on. It goes on the radio on the Independent Ag Network, and it goes to newspapers along the High Line. And I always wonder. My deadline is on Wednesday, and so I send it off on Wednesday, and then I think, geez, what am I going to write about next week? And by Saturday or Sunday, I've got two or three different topics that I could write about. So it seems like there's probably a never-ending supply.
Mm-hmm. Can you talk about COVID-19, maybe not so much affecting your ranch, but how can it affect our food supply? Should we worry about things like that?
I think COVID-19 is going to affect our food supply. What I've noticed is my daily life hasn't changed very much just because we're in calving season and I tend to stay home and self-isolate anyway. But my direct meat sales are, I'm really busy with those. And this is not usually a busy season. So I think consumers are a little bit concerned about the supply. There are a couple processing plants that are shut down. I think that's going to be an excuse for prices to go up. There are four processors who control 80% of the beef market. So any excuse they can think of to increase prices and make some more money, they use. And I'm not just saying that flippantly, and that's not my opinion. That's their proven track record. So, I think that people need to be thinking about how they can diversify their recipe box and think about what they can use that they have. I also think that there are a lot of ranches who depend on the commodity market. And right now, what's happened is COVID-19 is the third punch in the face that beef producers have felt in the last few years. The first one is lack of transparency in the market, and that's because there's only four packers that run 80% of the market. And so they tend to tell us what price we're going to take. And then back in early February, the USDA allowed Brazil to start exporting meat to the U.S. So the U.S. was importing Brazilian meat. And that market was only open for 2 years, and then had been shut down because the inspectors were being paid off and rotten meat was coming into the U.S. So that dropped prices. So then here comes COVID-19, and this is the third punch where the cattle prices just bottomed out. And while the beef prices in the grocery store are rising all the time, I looked at the futures market yesterday for the cattle futures market, and it was the second lowest price since 1999 for cattle. So beef producers are facing really super low prices, and combined with some other natural disasters, bankruptcies are almost record high. There's
suicides.
The beef industry is really fragile.
Yeah, from what I understand, suicides are up too with the ranching community. How do you keep your spirits up? I mean, after a challenging day or hearing news like that where maybe you're not getting what you think you should be getting for your product, and yet you see the stores and other people making all this profit. I mean, how do you keep your spirits up, you know, to find the drive to keep going?
Well, first of all, I rant, and I get most of my news from the radio. We don't have TV, and so I tend to talk to the radio quite a lot, and my poor daughter has to tell me to calm down. But then I walk outside, and I turn my cell phone off, and I look at the grass, and we've had a lot of moisture this year. The grass is starting to green up, you know, and what I know is that fundamentally I know how to raise livestock. If I keep taking the next step and doing the very best I can, which I will tell you, is not perfect. And I get mad at myself when I miss a clue that I need to, that I should catch, or don't take care of an animal the way I should. I get really mad at myself. So I'm far from perfect, but I know what I'm doing, and I know that fundamentally I can do this job. What I need to do is make sure that I manage my money as well as I can, too. I would love to have a new tractor this year. I'm not going to buy a new tractor. The tractor I drive is older than I am, and I was born before we landed on the moon. So, but my tractor still runs, and that's what I'm going to use. I'd need to put gutters on the house, but I'm not going to do that either. So I'm going to wait and not spend money, which will affect all of the local businesses in Conrad, sure, too. So, but that's the only thing I know what to do.
You're not just selling meat, though. You've got other things going on. When you go to your web page, you have a lot of things, products for sale. Do you want to talk about that a little bit? What you have to offer?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. I one of my rants at one point was about wool and the fact that almost all of the U.S., all of the wool in the U.S. eventually makes its way to China as a raw product and then comes back in sweaters and socks and blankets and various different things. And I didn't think that was very fair. So I started looking around for manufacturers in the United States. So I take our very best wool and I get it made into socks. There's a guy in Sims who tans pelts for me. And so I sell pelts on the website. I sell wool quilts and duvets because there's a place in Michigan that'll card my wool and make it into duvets. So those kinds of things, I just like to add value myself and keep it right here at the ranch. What happens is I don't market up nearly as much as all the people that are middle people in the rest of the industry, and so I try to take a little bit of added value and be fair to people that I like and who are my customers.
I again encourage you to go to the website Land of Grass. Check out the entire website. It's a beautiful website.
Thank you.
You know, that's one way to keep the ranch going, to make some money, especially in these hard times. Now let's talk about a reality show. I remember listening to one of your podcasts, and there was some talk about a reality show maybe on the ranch. Sure, that's another way of making some money, but you want to talk about that? Comment on that, please.
It didn't happen, and I'll tell you why it didn't happen, is because we don't have broadband internet, really? And they needed to be able to record, and my internet service wasn't good enough. So if anybody wants to help us with broadband internet in rural areas, that would really be nice. But I was a little reluctant to have people come, and I had a sneaking suspicion that they were going to try to set up some confrontation. They talked about bringing Shania Twain in, and she's a vegetarian, and I love Shania Twain's music, but I had a sneaking suspicion that they wanted to make this conflict between somebody who raises cattle and sells beef and a vegetarian, and I can be diplomatic for a couple hours, but if they were going to be there for a week, that was really going to stretch my diplomacy skills, and I was a little nervous about that.
I was doing an interview with Paul Skinner of the Scottish Rites, and I think you know who Paul Skinner is, and you donate to the community. You believe in giving back, don't you?
Oh, I certainly do. People are really good to me. Mm-hmm.
And so Paul was telling me about haggis, which I'm not really sure what it is. And I think we're not going to explain what it is. If someone wants to know, they can look it up. But it's a delicacy, isn't it? It's a delicacy. You might not find that on my plate anytime soon, but just an interesting story with Paul Skinner. I thought I might bring that up. I guess, is there anything you want people to know about being on the ranch at this time, or where do you see the future of the ranching going? Is it going to be okay, or what should we be thinking about?
You know, I really want to believe that ranching is going to be okay. We're going to face some tough times for the next couple years, I think. I'm trying hard to prepare for a couple years of low prices and low income. You know, the ranchers I know love the land, they love the wildlife. And nobody's in it for the money, because there's not very much money in terms of profit. But I would encourage people to find out where their food comes from. And I think it's really important. I think that there are really great producers, whether it's cattle or sheep or vegetables or any of the other, you know, grain farmers, and find people that you can connect with through your food.
I want to thank our guest today, rancher and author Lisa Schmidt. Lisa, I want to thank you so much for being on Public Radio.
Oh, thank you, Tom. I really appreciate the opportunity.